will visit with former State Representative Chris Broadwater, Republican from Hammond. He abruptly resigned his post in the Louisiana House and will discuss his decision to leave the lower chamber midway through his second term in office. There will be a special election early next year to fill the vacancy left by Representative Broadwater, who a few years ago was touted as a possible Speaker of the House. Also, Congressman Garrett Neil Graves, 6th District Republican from Baton Rouge, will assess the impact of the sweeping tax bill passed by Congress this week. Garrett Graves voted for it, as did every other member of the delegation from Louisiana, with the exception of Democrat Cedric Richmond of New Orleans. Two U.S. Senators, Bill Cassidy and John Kennedy, cast the deciding votes in the Senate. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your numbers are 877-217-517, wherever you may be. And if you're in the Baton Rouge calling area, you can reach us at 297-5633. The email is talklouisiana@talk.org. And we're talking with Chris Broadwater to begin, followed by Congressman Garrett Graves, if things go according to plan. But Chris Broadwater is one of the most eloquent members to be in the Louisiana House in some time, Republican from Hammond, a lawyer, and he abruptly resigned his post this week, midway through his second term in office. And it is always a pleasure to talk with you, but this time under different circumstances. Hello, Representative Broadwater.
Good morning, Jim, and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you and your family, and I am under the impression that your family had much to do with this decision.
They had everything to do with the decision, Jim. I thoroughly enjoyed my service in the legislature, and will continue to enjoy it until the resignation is effective. I gave an effective date of March 1st, though if my successor is elected earlier than that, then the resignation will be effective then. And I did the effective date March 1st to ensure that if there is a special session, that the district would be represented. If there is no special session, then I'll make it earlier than that. But my family was the only reason for this. I've missed a great deal of time, and I know it's time that I can't get back. And while I enjoyed my service, I enjoy being with my family even more, and I think it's important for me, particularly with four young daughters, to be present as much as I can and to be involved in my business to provide for them as much as I can. And I just simply wasn't able to do that while also serving.
Well, you invested some good years. Your children are still in the house, and I would imagine they didn't see a whole lot of you over the last few years.
They didn't, and certainly it came in spurts. During the spring is obviously when I would be gone most. But you know, members of the legislature are often gone during the summer and fall and winter, as there are various meetings and obligations, which is part of the job. But then, whenever the spring hits, it's pretty much around mm-hmm. the clock. And certainly in the last 2 years, it's been more than normal because of all the special sessions that we've also had.
877-217-5757 is your number for Talk Louisiana. Chris Broadwater is our guest, the representative, at least for a few more months. He's leaving March 1st after serving in the Louisiana House since January 9th of 2012. That was the day that Alabama beat LSU 21-0 in the BCS championship game. I recall there was a lot of consternation about the session opening on the same day, and I'm sure you remember that day well.
I do remember that day well, but I certainly hate you bringing up so many negative memories there, not the inauguration, but the loss to Alabama.
6 years ago, almost, and what a 6 years it has been, first with Governor Jindal and then with Governor John Bel Edwards. And there was some thought that you would be a logical choice to be Speaker of the House, considering that you knew Governor Edwards well, were considered to be a moderate member of the GOP caucus, but it didn't work out. Would that have been a game changer for you?
Not in terms of this decision. I think the only thing that, that may have changed, and looking back on things, I know that that would have required even more time away from my family. In fact, if it had changed anything, it might have sped up the decision. So God has ways of intervening sometimes when his plan is better than ours, and so has it worked out. I did not end up being Speaker of the House, and you know, in retrospect, that might be a blessing for me and my family. I certainly think that I could have done the job, and I believe I would have done it well in trying to build unity within the House in order to solve problems. You mentioned that I'm sometimes described as a moderate. I'm not sure whether that's accurate. I think what would probably be a better description is that I try to solve problems wherever they are, and sometimes they are issues that are decidedly conservative. Sometimes they're issues, particularly like we're wrestling with now on budget and tax issues, where I get described a little differently in terms of the political scale. But at the end of the day, I didn't seek to try to be a conservative or a moderate or a liberal. My goal was to solve problems. I felt like that's what my constituents sent me there to do.
What's your early read on what's going to happen next year? Are you getting out of Dodge just before the posse? This fiscal cliff is looming now just 6 months away, and it has to be addressed quickly, or are we going to have a real collision come June 30th? What's your take right now on where we are?
Well, I'm not so sure that I would be getting out of Dodge before then. It's still possible that we will have a special session in February to address the problem and try to solve it in advance of the regular session. To me, I believe that is the most responsible thing to do. No one in the legislature wants to see us waste money, taxpayers' money. But it's my belief that if we wait until the end of the regular session and then have a special session right at the end, that is exactly what we will be doing, largely because my belief that we would see our credit rating drop again. And as your listeners know, that ends up costing the state more money whenever we operate within the bond market and other places. And to me, that's nonsensical. We know what the problems are. We know what the potential solutions are. It is simply a matter of getting in there, rolling up our sleeves, and making the decisions to solve the problem. So I hope and pray that there's a special session in February and that the problem gets solved then. I know that the parties have all been working. We were engaged in meetings beginning almost immediately after we left session last summer, and both Republicans, Democrats, and Independents meeting together, trying to build coalitions in order to solve the problem. I know the Speaker has been working with folks, and I see the Governor has set a deadline for any proposed resolution to be essentially set in stone before he calls the special. So it's my hope that that gets done, and I think that's what's in the best interest of the state.
Can Republicans and Democrats work together?
Yes, absolutely. You know, a lot is made of some of the sometimes stalemate in the House, and that is certainly disappointing. But those individuals, they do work together, and they do work behind the scenes. Often there is disagreement, but I don't have anything negative to say about the members that are there. There are 104 other members in the House of Representatives who are good-hearted people doing their dead-level best to try to do what they believe is right with regard to their constituency that they represent. Now, having said that, I would tell you that the way we draw these district lines goes a long ways towards establishing what each individual member believes their constituents want. And we have moved down a path over the years to where the districts have become decidedly more Democrat-leaning or decidedly more Republican-leaning, and that does create an atmosphere where it is a little more difficult to find that middle ground and resolution. It's like going into a mediation sometimes with two unreasonable lawyers, and the mediator gets frustrated because the parties start so far apart that it takes forever to get them to some middle ground where resolution can occur. That's kind of what is happening politically, and it's unfortunate, but they're good people. They're trying to do the right thing for their constituents, and they have succeeded many times in working together, and I believe they will going forward. I think they're working diligently right now to try to find those solutions that they can all support.
When we are discussing how to get to the finish line, many are saying that we need cuts. Others are saying we need more taxes. Others, some are saying we need a combination. How do you view it?
I think the combination is correct. Certainly there are areas where we can find ways to do some cuts. I don't see a pathway forward for me personally where the entire problem can be solved with only cuts. And I think if you look at history and just the recent history, you had House Bill 1 go through appropriations last year when we were facing a similar cliff in similar magnitude. And that's a very conservative committee. But when the bill left that committee, the amount of cuts they were able to identify was barely over $100 million. And they worked diligently to try to find ways to cut. After that got scrubbed, and you saw that there were some things that were cut that ultimately didn't make sense, that number was whittled down considerably. And I think that's in large part due to the fact that during the 8 years of Governor Jindal's terms, we saw a significant number of cuts.
We'll be back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your numbers again are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, outside the area, 877-217-5757. And you can send an email anytime, any place, to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're continuing our visit with Chris Broadwater, Christopher D. Broadwater, who soon will be a former member of the Louisiana House. He announced his resignation this week, saying that family matters prevailed over what has been a chaotic situation at the Capitol through much of his 6 years there. But in the last 2 years, six special sessions, I think, and he's a man who has to make a living. And as we went to the break, you were talking about the philosophical collision with some advocating cuts, like Senator Kennedy, former Treasurer Kennedy, and others saying, look, we've cut enough, and it's time to face the fact that we need new revenue, in other words, taxes, to address this issue. And you say a combination is the best prescription, but even that is met with resistance by some, as you know, Representative Broadwater. Some people say, absolutely, no way, no new taxes, never, ever again. So how do you get past that when you need two-thirds support to get a tax through both chambers before it can become palatable and become the law of the state?
That's the conundrum, and that's what the parties are working so hard to try to address. The reason I say that there ought to be some mixture is based on two things. One, for those that say absolutely no new taxes, whether they be my local constituents or folks around the state or colleagues, I've said something very similar to what I think the governor has said. Okay, fine. Show me your plan. Show me where you want to cut that amount in a way where you're able to do it in a responsible fashion. And I'm all ears. I've yet to have anybody show me even a proposed plan with cuts of that magnitude. It's very, say, you look at the what has happened in Ways and Means Committee, where very minimal cuts are made or proposed through the elimination of some exemptions or credits. And every one of those has a constituency tied to it, and some of them have very good policy reasons why they should remain in place. It's not an easy thing to do, and frankly, I don't think it's the responsible thing to do because I've yet to see a responsible plan. Though there are places where we can and should make cuts. The second reason I would tell you that I think that it ought to be a mixture of both is trying to identify what the source of our current fiscal problems stem from. And frankly, it's my belief that we made a bad fiscal policy decision when we brought in the Stelly plan in its entirety. That wasn't necessarily the bad fiscal plan, but we then eliminated half of it. And so you have half of a Stelly plan, which only worked when there were two prongs to that seesaw. It's out of balance now. And frankly, what I think is the simplest solution to it is that we ought to have either none of Stelly or we ought to have all of Stelly. But we only have half now. And the half that was eliminated in 2008, 2007, 2008, was on the revenue side. And so that's why I think that there has to be some element of that in order to bring back balance.
And the half that was retained?
The half that was retained were the constitutional exemptions. And so the half that was eliminated was put in statute, so it was able to be eliminated fairly easily. The half that remained were what is otherwise called as the giveaway portion. It wasn't the revenue portion. It was what we gave back to the citizens, and those were sales tax exemptions on food, drugs, utilities. And so you have one portion where you have you've restricted the amount of revenue coming in by providing an exemption. And on the other side of the seesaw, you had revenue coming in through increased personal income tax. We got rid of the revenue coming in but maintained the revenue going out, and it got out of balance rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And ironically, almost exactly the number that we see right now in terms of the deficit.
Well, when we look at the situation as we face it, we have what amounts to a billion-dollar fiscal cliff coming that has to be addressed, and hopefully cooler heads will prevail, and it may happen before Chris Broadwater leaves on the 1st of March. But if that is not accomplished, Representative, that means that there will be quite a scurry to the finish line come June.
Yes, and you know, I mentioned earlier that I think that would be very bad and frankly irresponsible for the state because of our credit rating being number one. But there are many other reasons why I think that would not be a good idea. For example, higher education. You've got universities, community and technical colleges around the state preparing for a fall semester, deciding what they can provide, what their staff levels will be, who do they need to hire to get in there. Those things in that course catalog has to be put out so that students can prepare at the end of the spring and into the summer for that fall semester. If we go into go through the end of the regular session and the Constitution requires the passage of a balanced budget, it will be a budget with roughly $1 billion less in it. There will be significant cuts within higher education that will destabilize them and make them unable to perform what we've asked them to do. And at a time when we still have workforce shortages in terms of skilled labor for specific positions, to me, that is the absolute wrong message to send in this economy. It's my belief that if you don't have a special session in February, I don't believe a budget will get passed.
All right, Barry in Mid-City. Barry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Representative Broadwater.
Good morning, and I want to thank you, Representative Broadwater, for your service to our state over these many years. I also would like to know if you could see the Stelly plan come back in whole all the way, please.
All right. Is that practical, or is that completely out of the realm of possibility?
You know, I think that it is something that has been discussed. I think it's a very difficult thing to pull 70 votes together in order to achieve, largely because the portion that you would have to put back in place is a compression of the personal income tax brackets in order to achieve it, either in whole or in part. I certainly think it's possible, but it, based on the conversation that I'm hearing, I don't believe that that is likely going to be the solution.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about this, Representative, but what would our late dear friend C.B. Forgotston think of all this right now?
the fiscal cliff or my resign?
I think both. What would he say?
Well, I think with regard to to my resigning, he would probably say, "I told you so." I talked to him prior to running 6 years ago, and he basically said, "Are you really sure you know what you're getting into? And are you sure you really want to do this?" And CB, as usual, would say, "I told you so." That was always his mm-hmm. response to me, regardless of the issue. And I certainly miss my dear friend CB. With regard to the fiscal cliff, I really hate that CB's not here, because he would have so much to offer to the debate and the discussion. And I think that he would be a proponent of trying to maximize responsible cuts. But I think he would likewise would be practical and say, you really need to take this mm-hmm. once in a generational opportunity and reform the tax code in order to create balance.
Chuck and Scott. Chuck, you're on with Representative Broadwater. Hi,
Good
Chuck.
Good morning, and thank you for your service. I don't pretend to understand the political process, but it seems to me that all of these special sessions that we've had and the cost that they impose upon the state budget are part of the problem. It seems like they ought to be able to make the hard decisions and get the job done in the time allotted. And please help me understand why that can't be done. The other thing is, why do we spend so much money on outside consultants? Don't we have enough intelligence and skill sets in the state to avoid paying outside consultants?
All right. We're going to get Representative Broadwater to respond, and then we'll hear from Congressman Garrett Graves from the 6th District. We're back after this short pause on 89.3 WRKF. Now the news with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. 877-217-5757. And on deck, calling in from Washington, where he is working. Congress is still in session as Garrett Graves, 6th District U.S. House member, representing much of South Louisiana, and, of course, his hometown is Baton Rouge. Your number, 877-217-5757. And before we go to Congressman Graves, Chris Broadwater, now soon to be a former state representative as of March 1st, your thoughts about the sentiments expressed by Chuck and Scott as we went to the break regarding the options that are available in this fiscal chaos we're having in state government?
Yeah, real briefly, his question was, do we really need the special sessions? Why couldn't we get this done in the regular sessions? You know, in some regards, I would agree with him. The special session we had last year at the end of the regular session, which was done largely to pass the budget and to do the capital outlay bill, frankly, I believe that should have been done in the regular session, and it ended up costing the taxpayers an additional $60,000 a day because we didn't get our work done in a timely fashion, and to me, that was irresponsible. There are other times, though, like now, where a special session will be required because we can't take up tax issues in the regular session. So it's a mixed bag in terms of response to that. But hopefully we will get the solution identified and mm-hmm. everyone on board and get done as quickly as we can to move the state forward.
Well, thank you, Representative Broadwater, and Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you, Jim. You're a class act, and I always appreciate you.
And thank you for your service. See you
All right,
soon.
Bye-bye.
And we're joined now by Congressman Garrett Graves. The Wall Street Journal puts it this way. Congress gave final approval Wednesday to a $1.5 trillion tax cut, delivering a major victory for President Donald Trump and GOP leaders after nearly a year in political control of the Capitol. At the heart of the plan, the most sweeping since 1986, is a cut in the corporate tax rate, 21% from 35%, that is expected to provide a stimulus to the U.S. economy as soon as next year. The tax plan also cuts individual tax rates and aims to simplify the tax code by eliminating some deductions, trimming others, and jettisoning a personal exemption. Congressman Graves was among those who voted for it, as did most of the Republicans. I think all of the Republicans voted for it. Your thoughts about how significant this vote and this measure will be for the country,
Jim? I think it's really going to have significant impacts, a significant boost to our economy, and I think there are a few statistics that kind of indicate what our tax code has done. You noted that we have not updated our tax code in 31 years. So we are operating under an antiquated, broken tax code that doesn't reflect today's economy. So if you look back to 1960, we had 17 of the top global companies in the world were headquartered in the United States. 17 of the top 20 in 1960. Today, we have 6. You can look at the amount of income that U.S. companies have made that they are keeping sequestered in foreign subsidiaries, and some estimates indicate it approaches $2.6 to $3 trillion with a T, $3 trillion. They're not bringing that money back to the United States, investing it back here because of our higher tax rate. And so I think that these changes to the tax code, number one and most importantly, it's going to reduce individual and family income taxes and allow hardworking Americans to keep a larger portion of their paychecks. But I think this helps to prepare the United States for today's economy. It helps to stop penalizing our small businesses and their competition with companies around the globe.
As far as, Congressman, what is in it for Louisiana, is our state going to benefit from this?
Well, Jim, as you know, we have 5 of the top 15 ports in the United States. We have a significant amount of exports here, where you have a lot of states that are importing, a lot of the East and West Coast ports, they're importing a lot of stuff, but then they're sending these containers or ships back empty. In Louisiana, we actually export a tremendous amount. And so I think because of our role in maritime commerce and global commerce, this is going to be very helpful for our economy, for our jobs, higher wages, and more employment opportunities for Louisiana. But then distilling down, there's some provisions in there that are even more focused on Louisiana. Like, for example, we had introduced legislation last year that was going to provide a tax a break for disaster victims, for flood victims from the 2016 floods. And so that was ultimately included in the final package. There were some small adjustments to coastal restoration funding, which I think is helpful, but ultimately, helping to give people a tax break, not penalizing them for tapping their retirement savings to rebuild homes and businesses, lowering the threshold for what's known as casualty loss, or basically folks' losses as a result of the flood. We worked, LSU and some of the other universities had reached out to us on the graduate school tax credit. We were able to keep that protected, even learned some things a few years ago that I wasn't aware of before I came to Congress. Louisiana is one of the top beneficiaries of the historic tax credit. So many historic buildings and a lot of the restoration and economic development projects in the state. Louisiana has been the number one state, I think the number two and number three state in the nation in terms of benefiting from that. So that's protected. So really a number of things in there that are specific to Louisiana and going to help with higher wages, help improve competitiveness of our small mm-hmm. businesses, and help our disaster victims.
877-217-5757 for Congressman Garrett Graves, or you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And a listener asks about the Democratic opposition, stating that 83% of the benefits of the tax plan will go to the top 1%. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I've read some of these statistics, and certainly you can play with numbers and make them say different things, but what you have to keep in mind is who pays pays taxes right now. For example, if you add up the top wage earners, for example, just the top 2.7% of wage earners. Okay, so this is a really important statistic, Jim. The top 2.7% of wage earners, the people that earn $250,000 and more, pay 51.6% of all income taxes. So of course you can make statistics suggest that the higher relief is for the higher wage earners, but it's absurd to come up with any other statistic if you look solely at the dollars. Mm-hmm. But when you start looking at percentages of relief, for example, you can have a single person making $52,000 a year with two kids, they'll get a 36% reduction in their taxes. 36%. So you know, different number runs we've done showing different tax relief, but you've got to look at percentages or relativity of how much somebody's earning to get a real understanding of where this relief is targeted, and this is certainly targeted toward the middle income earners.
Marie writes to talk at talklouisiana.org, some are worried that the tax cuts will be offset by cuts to Medicare and Social Security. Can Congressman Graves promise that these important programs will not be cut or changed?
Well, I'm certainly not going to commit that they wouldn't be changed. If we can find ways to improve them, then I want to do that all day long. I think one of the frustrations within government is that we are continuing to do things that are outdated, antiquated, and end up being less efficient in terms of meeting, whether it be our retirement goals or keeping us as healthy as we can be. And so I think it's important that we continue to work to modernize, to update, to help improve the efficiency of federal programs and federal spending. Now, so I've heard obviously over and over again that, oh, this is going to increase the deficit, and according to joint tax, it does. However, you've got to keep in mind that, as I noted earlier, the decline in global companies that are headquartered in the United States and watching companies offshore and decide, well, gosh, if I can pay one-third the tax rate in Ireland versus the United States, then you better move my headquarters to Ireland. You better move my jobs to Ireland. So you've got to consider the boost to the economy that this is going to result in. When you look at the dynamic effect by the boost to the economy, I think that compared to a baseline, meaning compared to no action, you are going to see substantial economic activity in the United States. And I don't think that ultimately you will see the debt that is projected that's ultimately caused by this tax return. I think it's going to cause a boost in economic activity and in revenue to the federal government, just like we saw after the tax reduction that President Kennedy pushed, after the tax reduction we saw that President Reagan pushed, and, of course, mm-hmm. the one that President Bush pushed as well. We saw an increase in federal revenue following those. Now, in regard to ensuring we protect our seniors' health care and Social Security, sure, I want to do everything I can to continue protecting those programs, but I do just want to clarify that if we can find better, smarter ways, more efficient ways of doing things, certainly let's step in and take advantage of those efficiencies and updated ideas.
All right. Well, I'm old enough to remember 1986 when the Reagan plan was passed, and it was passed after several months of hearings, and it received a lot of Democratic support in Louisiana. John Breaux, Bennett Johnston, Billy Tozan, Buddy Romer, they were all Democrats then. They voted for it. But this time around, there were few, if any, hearings, and of course, the vote was largely along partisan lines. Is that unfortunate?
I think it is unfortunate. And first, Jim, I want to clarify that that there actually were dozens and dozens of hearings that were held on tax reform that have occurred.
Not on this bill, though.
Well, on the bill itself, what they did is they did hearings on different tax approaches, and ultimately those different hearings and informed the different provisions that ultimately made up this bill. But pivoting to the partisan issue, I think it's incredibly unfortunate that Congress itself has devolved into this partisan mess that it is today. I think that you have way too many people that put party before they put people.
Okay, we do have to take a break, but we'll hear more from Congressman Garrett Graves, 877-217-5757. We're back with the congressman after this two-minute pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster, pleased to have you with us, and we're pleased to hear from Congressman Garrett Graves, who is right now spending the holidays in Washington. This could go right up to Christmas Day. The House is in session, and we'll talk with him about something that may happen today of significance to our state. But you were talking as we hit the break, Congressman, about the partisan divide and how basically on this bill it was Republican yay and Democrats nay, and it's like that on many other bills. But are we going to get past that?
First of all, you can look at numerical data that has shown, I mean, very clear that Congress has grown more partisan over the last several decades. I mean, just to where it is, it really is incredibly partisan environment, divisive environment, and I'll say it again, I think that's very unfortunate. We have a policy in our office that we try and introduce bipartisan legislation and things that we do. And I think you look at our record of legislative success, it shows that that strategy pays off. I think that things are – I was hopeful that after the Steve Scalise shooting that people were going to realize that all of this hateful rhetoric that's out there really does divide our country and really does cause violence or influences violence and awful types of outcomes. Unfortunately, that bipartisan spirit lasted about 2 days, and then we devolved back into this awful environment. But I don't see things really improving or changing over the next few years, but we have been working with a number of other Republicans and Democrats to recognize that we may represent conservatives or liberals, but bottom line is we've got to put our people first and stop allowing for party leaders to demand or dictate how we vote. And I think that my record has been very clear that we put South Louisiana first and what's in the best interest there. But I think we're probably going to see a few more years of this unfortunate partisan bickering in Congress before we see things get better.
Jack on Government Street. Jack, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Congressman Graves.
Good morning. I have one question. If you would like to fix Medicare, why wouldn't you allow the government to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies?
Hey, Jack, amen. I've been very clear for years that, Jack, in fact, I've said these exact words. The federal government today negotiates hotel rates. They negotiate airplane rates, negotiate car rental rates. And I think that they should be negotiating pharmaceutical rates as well. I do. I think that you have the largest purchaser of health insurance in the nation by far. I think that the power of that heavy investment should be used to make sure that the government, that our seniors and others are maximizing value.
All right. Ann on Blue Bonnet. Hi, Ann. You're on Talk Louisiana with Congressman Graves.
Yes, I noticed that Congressman Graves did not answer the question of a prior caller as to whether he would make cuts to Medicare. I would like him to address the automatic PAYGO cuts to Medicare that are going to be caused by the tax deficit bill that just passed. Tell me how much Medicare is going to be automatically cut as a result of that, and how much other farm programs and other programs will be cut by PAYGO.
All right, Congressman.
Yeah, and so let me, I thought I did, and I apologize if that didn't come across the way that I expected. But so number one, just want to reiterate that I think that the projections that this is going to cause, the deficit projections that this is, that the bill is projected to cause, I think are based too much upon static conditions as opposed to the dynamic conditions that we saw following the Kennedy tax cuts and others. And so I don't think that you're going to see this great deficit caused by the tax cut. I think you're going to see a rebounding economy, more economic activity, mm-hmm. Just like we're seeing in the stock market taking off already. In regard to cuts and promising to not make cuts or what have you, look, I think that there are some incredible inefficiencies. In fact, Jack just mentioned one on pharmaceuticals. I think there's some incredible inefficiencies in many of our healthcare programs, the federally run healthcare programs, including the awful healthcare outcomes that come from Medicaid, worse than other private insurance and other healthcare outcomes. So I think that what we need to be doing is we need to be looking at lessons learned and investing our Medicare, Medicaid, and other healthcare dollars more efficiently. Every time there has been what's known as an SGR, basically a situation where Medicare was going to run out of funding, Congress has stepped in and provided additional funding. I have voted for those in the past. I expect to continue doing that. But we've got to be careful about getting ourselves stuck in one mindset and using a 1960s, 1970s model and saying we've got to stick with this all forever. Right. Because you end up having healthcare providers that sit there and play games and find ways to maximize. You have improvements in health technology and in cures. And we need to be as innovative and adaptable to and agile as new solutions come up to make sure that we're providing the best healthcare outcomes for our seniors and also the best investment of dollars in terms of efficiency for our taxpayers.
Here's one from Campbell saying, can Congressman Graves address the LSU issue and concern regarding season ticket holders?
Yeah, Campbell, so first, LSU and the Graduate Students Associations and others, they raised a number of issues to us. We did prioritize those in our discussions with the committee working on the final version of the bill, and happy to report that we did get a number of wins. In regard to the Tiger Athletic Foundation, I did have a couple of meetings with King Alexander and talked to him about that. Ultimately, the tax deduction was not preserved in the final bill, meaning that people who buy LSU football tickets, a portion of that is not allowed to be deducted from taxes anymore. And I'll be honest, Campbell, it was very difficult. And you just heard someone raising concerns about Medicare cuts and other impacts of the federal government. It is difficult to try and defend tax cuts for football tickets whenever we're looking at trying to protect tax cuts for medical expenses for seniors, for disaster victims, and others. And so ultimately, that position did not prevail. At the end of the day, we're going to continue to work closely with LSU and others to make sure that we don't see adverse impacts on education funding. And like I said, we're able to protect the graduate student tax credit and the benefit that comes from working for the grad school tax credit, and also the benefit from that employers may provide to employees for educational purposes. So we're just going to continue work with LSU and the other universities to make sure that they're protected. We've been able to help them get millions and millions of dollars in funding for different research and other programs. And, of course, when I worked for the state, LSU was an important partner with us on coastal restoration and other efforts as well, and big fan of the university.
William in Opelousas, please be brief. You're on with Congressman Graves. Hi, William.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I just like to say the tax bill has passed, so.
Turn your radio down, William.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay, go ahead now. Try again.
The tax bill has passed, and in time we're going to tell whether it works or not, but I'd like to ask, do he believe that the jobs left to go overseas because of the tax plan that we had?
All right, what about losing jobs overseas, Congressman?
I'm sorry. It sounded like it broke up in the middle of the call. Is the tax bill going to cause losing jobs overseas?
Yes.
Well, look, what we have seen in the United States is that we've lost a number of jobs in different industries. I think what the tax bill does is it helps to restore the competitiveness of U.S. small businesses that has eroded over the last few decades. As other nations have stepped up and improved the competitiveness of their tax code, it has given their foreign companies a benefit or a strategic advantage over ours. And so what this bill does is it helps to restore a level playing field. It helps to take away that foreign company advantage over U.S. companies, and especially, William, when you compare this or you add this to some of the regulatory reform we've been able to do this year, helping to improve the efficiency of complying with regulations, helping to bring down those costs on the U.S. economy. So I think it's more of a restoring competitiveness and helping to prevent additional job losses in the United States and hopefully, yes, create more jobs in our country because we've lost them over the last several years as a result of our uncompetitive tax code.
All right, we're about a minute and a half away. Actually, Ali says minute 15. What about disaster recovery and infrastructure, Congressman?
Well, so disaster recovery, for the floods we've had in Louisiana, we're approaching probably about $8 billion in federal funds we've been able to provide, including flood insurance type payments. We funded the Restore Louisiana program. We've been able to negotiate about a $500 million increase for transportation projects in Louisiana. We were able to, the CWIPRA program, Coastal Restoration Program, able to pass a bill that signed into law that's going to provide between $80 and $100 million a year for coastal restoration, the tax break for flood victims. So a lot of things going on. And as a result of a bill I think we're going to vote on today, I think we're going to be able to eliminate this whole duplication of benefits issue that so many people in Louisiana have been victimized by.
Congressman, thank you for joining us and appreciate your time, and hope you and your beautiful wife, Carissa, and your family have a great holiday.
Thanks, Jim. Merry Christmas to you and everyone.
See you soon. And we thank you for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Sorry we could not get to all of you who wanted to talk with Congressman Graves, but hopefully we will have occasion to speak with him again soon, and we appreciate him taking time from what is a busy schedule with Congress meeting right now to spend time with us right here on Talk Louisiana. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Have a great day, 4 days before Christmas, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.